challenging yourselves. This part of the road that you're on is just the very beginning of your road, because your road is going to continue. And the more challenges you put in front of yourself, the further you're going to get. And so don't think that this is the end, because it's never the end. Keep learning. And here's my biggest piece of advice. Don't shy away from a challenge, because that is how you grow. That's how you become better, is by putting something in front of you that you don't think you can do, and then getting it done.
Got a chance to go south again, South Carolina, with Medical University of South Carolina. They were having their white coat ceremony, and for some reason asked me to be the keynote speaker. I know, I was as confused as you. While in town, we decided to do a live show with some faculty and students at MUSC, and it sounded a little something like this. First round is brought to you by Owens Recovery Science, a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow, restriction, rehabilitation training, and the equipment you need to apply it. Check out OwensRecoveryScience.com for info and the schedule.
Broadcasting to physical therapists around the world. Heard in over 135 countries with more than 1 million downloads and counting.
This is
the PT Pintcast. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
May I introduce?
Please allow me to introduce you to.
Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
All right, we've gone south for this episode of PT Pintcast. We're at Medical University of South Carolina. That's a heck of an intro right there. I like that a lot. MUSC in Charleston, South Carolina, and I got a big South Carolina hug of humidity as soon as I got off the airplane, and I like it. So thanks for having me out, guys. We've got students from all 3 years, right? Where are the first year students? So young and eager, they have no idea what's in front of them. Second year students? Halfway through. And third year students? All mentally checked out. Not even present at all, but they're here physically. We like that. So bringing up somebody who is no stranger to the show, let's hear it for Dr. Lisa Saladin. You come with a posse, and everybody seems to like you around here. They made you bat leadoff.
I think that's the torture.
Yeah, nobody wants to go first. Everybody will go second or third. So you were on the show before. We talked to you, what, Boston? At the next conference, maybe?
CSM 2017.
Maybe. They all start to blend together. They're just conference centers, really. And I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I do typically drink a beer or two during these interviews. But we were talking to you there, and the first time I spoke to you, we were really just talking about your role in the American Physical Therapy Association, which is what?
I am currently vice president of the American Physical Therapy Association.
Yeah, let's hear for that. That's kind of a big deal, right? Does that make students like nervous when they figure out like one of their professors here on campus is like a kind of a big deal nationally?
I think I intimidate them every now and again.
If I had the power to do that, I would do that, but I do not.
I don't try. It just happens.
So you're, I said you are the APTA vice president, but you're about to be done being APTA. Yeah, you're checking your watch.
Less than seven days.
How long is the term of vice president for everybody?
3 years.
3 years. I wanted to talk about that, you know, coming to the end of a pretty cool opportunity to represent your university, your students, your state, your colleagues at the highest level possible. How was your run?
Loved it. Loved every minute.
What were the major things that you saw happen in your 3 years as VP?
Well, we made the decision to buy new buildings for the APTA and are in the process of having a new home built for the APTA that's going to raise our brand and our profile. We built the APTA registry, the outcomes registry, which is going to allow us to collect data on all patient outcomes and really help standardize care across the country and elevate the standard of care for physical therapy.
Talk about that for 1 second. I love this. I mean, a lot of times we talk about big data in such like a scary, creepy, big brother listening to everything you're saying, Alexa's just a spy sort of way. But the outcomes registry, explain it to even like somebody could me understand it.
Okay.
What is it?
So the intent is that every physical therapist, and right now it's geared to outpatient settings, but the intent is that it would cross all settings. Every physical therapist will enter data on patients, and each patient will have a standardized set of measures that will have to be entered. And then when you look at it, if you have 300,000 patients with the same diagnosis and you have to enter standardized what you did for treatment and standardized outcome measures, you can start to collect some really fascinating data about what works best.
You got a pretty big N.
You will have a pretty big N if all goes well, yes. Yeah.
So that's the idea, is we'll be able to, because what's coming next? And we talk about, you know, the almighty dollar, right?
Yep.
Unfortunately, that M word, money, has to come into conversation. We're a very altruistic profession, but I like to buy cornflakes, big fan. You know, so how do we prove that our mojo is actually as good as we say it is? The only way you can do that is
data.
Yep. Yeah. So that's a big deal that you guys had really launched that initiative during your term.
Yep. We just passed the new mission for the association, and it's building communities. And that's one of the things that I have appreciated the most of all my time on the board. I've been on the board for 8 years now. I feel like I'm part of a network and part of a community of like-minded individuals that comes together regularly to really share how to move this profession forward.
I don't know how to follow that, so I'm just going to tell you to clap. And I feel like the things that you do or have done has been by accident. And you're only coming to South Carolina for like a year, right? That's all you were
going
to?
Yeah. Yeah. In 1990, I came here for 1 year.
Over and over and over. It was like Groundhog Day?
28 years later, I'm still here. I came from Canada 27 years ago, 28 years almost. And it was an accident. We were going to be here for 1 year, just the year after Hurricane Hugo. And turned out we liked it enough that we're still here.
You like that humidity hug that
Love
you get
it.
Every morning? Yeah, it's
yeah.
good. Was your trip to your positions at the APTA and you know, state and national stuff, that wasn't necessarily planned, right?
None of it was planned.
Yeah, just kind of like me, happy accident.
Yeah, I like to say you do the best at what you do, and doors will open, and then you can decide whether you want to enter.
Say yes, figure it out later.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kaipo's like, you want to do a show at MAC? I'm like, sure. What's the worst that could happen?
I couldn't do your job.
Yeah, it's super easy. So what's coming up? What's coming up for you after, you know, the VP thing ends in a week?
So,
you got a big smile on your face, so I know it's going to be fun. Yeah, what is it?
So my husband and I like to escape the heat and climb mountains. So this year will be our first technical climb, the first year that will probably be close to death, climbing a 19,000-foot peak in Peru.
Yeah, let's hear for that. What's the name of it?
It's Mount Pisco. Ice axe, crampons,
wow.
Ropes. We'll see if I survive. Crevasses might get me. You might not see me here in another month. We'll see.
You never know. That's fun.
Yeah.
Take a selfie.
I will take lots of selfies, lots of pictures, and then we will end up in a 5-star hotel with dinners in the 2 best restaurants in the world in Lima.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. End on a high note.
Got to have fun.
Yeah. What makes MUSC different from another program? As I mentioned in our intro, I mean, all PT programs are the same. They got to check the same boxes to make sure that they're accredited. But as I go to all these programs, there's just something different about each program. What's different about this one?
Well, we're the best.
Yeah, okay.
What makes us the best? I will start with the faculty. I've been here 27 years, and most of the people I started with are still here. And they are an amazing group that cares deeply about the students and the education the students get. So I would say the faculty is number one, and the students are number two. We recruit a really good group of students who also, most of which really care about the profession and really want to make a difference. So I think those two things. I know a lot of programs might say that.
Yeah.
It's really true.
Okay, we'll just stop it here. Do you guys agree? Or yeah, okay. Yeah. Smart. Smart. So you mentioned the program and research is a big thing that you guys kind of wrap yourselves up in. Is that something you guys really, really tout and what you look for in incoming students?
So research is something we've built really mostly over the last 8 years. We've always been engaged in research. We are now third in the country in NIH funding in colleges of health professions.
That's cool.
Which is a pretty big deal to go from ranked 43rd-ish to third in about 8 years. So our emphasis is primarily neurorehabilitation. I would say, is our greatest emphasis and focus area in research. We also do some pretty significant health services research in the college. So between those two things, those are probably the two strengths of ours in the area of research.
Plus, when you're recruiting and bringing someone to Charleston, just bring them to King Street and walk away, right?
Hey,
I mean, just leave
them
there?
I came for a year and I'm still here.
Yeah,
so
it's not bad.
I'm a good marketing person for
Charleston,
South Carolina.
You got a couple of beaches not far away. Yeah, it's not bad. Are you ready for your parting shot?
Yeah.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation, their mission to rehabilitate lives by believing in the strength of people. They believe in their clients and their ability to achieve what they once thought impossible. Optimal function to rehabilitate their lives. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
Parting shot of wisdom. Sorry, at the end of every guest, they get to do shots, but not actual shots, because again, school wouldn't allow it. Maybe later. What's one sentiment that you would leave, and I'll make the audience for your parting shot really be kind of reflective in terms of your position at APTA? You know, what would you say about somebody who is thinking about getting involved, much like you did, kind of by accident?
So when I came to this country, I knew no one, and I'd start going to conferences, and I'd eat in my hotel room by myself. Getting engaged with the APTA has built long-term friendships and relationships going back since I started with the APTA that I will treasure till I die. I still keep in touch with ex-presidents who were presidents when I was president of a chapter. The board colleagues that I have are phenomenal, and I have grown as a person, and I encourage every single one of you to get engaged in APTA. The leadership skills you will develop are second to none. I don't think I'd have this position at this university if I hadn't been a leader in the APTA. So please get engaged.
Let's hear that. Dr. Lisa Sladen.
Stand by. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to the PT Pinecast.
Hey guys, the Movement Maestro here, letting you know that Rock Tape is so much more than just a tape company. We are a movement company. Move stronger, longer with the world's best kinesiology tape, topical pain relief, mobility equipment, and protective gear. But that's not all. Learn from the best with our industry-leading continuing education courses. Want 20% off your first product purchase? Head on over to shop.rocktape.com and use the code PTPINECAST. Again, for the folks in the back, that's shop.rocktape.com and enter the code PTPINECAST. Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape, the movement industry's new standard for education.
And we're back. Let's get back to the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, at MUSC, bringing up our next guest. Been a physical therapist for 22 years, treating all sorts of neurodiagnoses and help people in any way she can. She teaches all the neuromuscular content here at Medical University of South Carolina and is the Neurological Residency Director. Welcome, Sarah Kraft.
Thank you.
We were talking earlier, you and I seem to be high energy people.
High energy.
High energy. Yeah, and I was like, you're going to be okay sitting down, sitting still?
It's going to be hard. I'm not a still person.
You can rock just like me anytime you want to do. So neuro residency director.
Yes.
That's cool.
Pretty cool.
How long have you been doing that?
We started 4 years ago. We're in our fifth cohort.
So you helped start it?
Yes. Mark Bowden and I started it together.
We were talking about that. A lot of blood, sweat, cursing, tears to start.
I never curse.
Yeah, no, me either. That got the biggest laugh, so yeah.
So probably not true.
So we just met about 10 minutes ago, but I'm guessing just by that guy's face that you actually do, maybe just a little bit. That's okay, we'll edit it out. Feel free to let it loose.
Not today.
So what was the situation? Were you here when they decided to start a residency, or did you come for that?
So
or
it's
what
a funny it? Story how the residency started.
Love funny stories.
Okay,
give it to
so
me.
So we were at CSM in New Orleans. I'm not sure of the year, but Dave Morissette, who was our division director at the time, said, Mark and Sarah and Chris Gregory, another faculty, I'd like to go to dinner with you guys. I've got this great restaurant in New Orleans, and I'd like to talk to you guys about something. And we said, oh, okay. So we walked, and we walked, and we walked really far. And the whole time we passed a lot of really good restaurants. We're like, maybe it's there, maybe right there. And so we kept walking, and probably, I don't know, maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles. It was a long walk, 20 minutes. And New Orleans got a lot of restaurants, but we walked far. We got into this little hole in the wall, and he ordered a Caesar salad. And he said it was the best Caesar salad in all of New Orleans.
Okay.
So, and that's where we talked about the neurological residency, and we, over a Caesar salad, and I think maybe we had a burger, but anyway, it wasn't anything at all Creole, which was weird.
Yeah.
We launched, we were going to do this neurological residency. And from that day, we, Mark and I, just put our nose to the grind and got it done.
Yeah. Getting it done is not an easy task, as you know. There's a lot of hoops to jump through.
A lot of hoops.
Like what? Like what are the major struggles? Because you see there's a big push within the profession to have more residency and fellowship trained clinicians. So there's a lot of these things popping up left and right. So what are some of the struggles?
Well, I can tell you what's unique about ours. It also created quite the struggle. So we have a distance residency program. So we are not an on-campus full residency program, which means we are partnered with HealthSouth and other rehab units really over the East Coast. So we've had residents as far as Sarasota, Florida, all the way up to York, Pennsylvania, and then as far as Nashville, Tennessee. So this big triangle that we do, which means that we've got to develop a curriculum that we can deliver from a distance and then bring these folks in-house to deliver part of the curriculum here. And then the mentoring, which is the most important part of a residency, how do we mentor them when they're so far away? Sure. And how do we make sure that they're getting mentored in the way that we wanted them mentored? So those were probably the biggest challenges. And we were the first to do any sort of program like this. And the advantage was that people didn't have to leave their jobs and relocate to be able to advance their practice, which was really important to us.
Yeah. How do you get over that? How do you keep that human connection when there's miles between? What are some of the things that you've been able to develop?
Well, we have a weekly meeting that's with WebEx. So we see them and, you know, I'm pretty high energy, so I'm forever joking and yeah. So, and then I call and text and, you know, I'm forever talking. I'm a talker.
I can tell.
Yeah. So it's not really that hard because I talk all the time. It's very natural for me to talk. So we decided to go 3 times a year. We go to every single site and we spend 8 hours with them every single year. So they get us mentoring them. So we're in their clinics, we're with them, we see what they're doing, we build their relationships. So
about how many residents? How many residents are you guys?
Well, can I say really one great thing that just happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 8 of our residents just passed their NCS from last year. And a plug to the orthopedic residency. They had 2 residents that graduated and they both passed their OCSs. So we just graduated, MUSC graduated 10 residents and all 10 of them passed.
Big deal.
Their specialty exam.
That's great.
Yeah. So we had 8 last year. We have 6 this year.
So now that you develop these residents and they're passing the test, which is good because, you know, that's at the end. It's kind of a big deal. What do you see in them change from start to finish? Because you got a pretty cool perspective being able to see from the outside and not have to worry about that test.
Right. That's right. I already did the test.
You're done.
It's done. Check. Like that, checked off. So what do I see? Well, what I really see is a change practice. And so that's the most exciting thing. And I would say this is for me and Mark, is to watch them grow from not really, they're doing therapy, but they don't maybe know why they're doing what they're doing or are they picking the right therapy? And I get to watch them grow and be real critical thinkers and deliver a level of care that they weren't delivering before we started. And I've seen that in every resident that I've mentored.
And that's hard.
Very hard.
The almighty why. Now, how many students in the audience, just show of hands. I know it's a podcast, but we'll just play. On Twitter, actively kind of in the PT kind of conversation. Any of you guys like kind of following? Nobody at all? Great. This is awesome. One, thank you for saving me. I appreciate that. I owe you a beer. What you see a lot is I feel like there's a lot of overcorrection. There's all this. This is horrible. Don't do any of this. And then there's the overcorrection of it's only this. And to see people, I mean, I think the statistic was something like 17 years, which is the time it took from an article to be published to actually make it into current practice. 17 years.
Crazy.
So seeing someone go through a residency and actually be able to change the way they think and practice is a big deal. And I know just from talking to a lot of people who develop residencies, it's not the tricks and tips anymore. It's not the, I'm going to show you the prone screw, or I'm going to show you this nice manip that's going to solve everything. It's the thought process.
Absolutely. So the whole thing is clinical reasoning. Why am I doing this? What does the evidence suggest? Have I translated the evidence, and how can I translate it? And then did it work? And that reflection to see, did it work? And if not, what could I do different? That's the piece that we're trying to teach our residents, the whole process.
Yeah. Because once you leave school, I know you have a ton of time right now as students, right? Just time all over the place. Do everything you want. There's even less time somehow when you graduate and go get a job.
Very true.
To look for articles. So I'll actually give a plug for another podcast, not my own, but a guy by the name of Eric Mera hosts a show called PT Inquest. So if you're like, you know, I want to check out some research, but I don't have time. Don't read articles while you drive. That's even worse than texting and driving. But you can listen to Eric's show, PT Inquest, and it's just a great way to he at least gets through, you know, a couple articles, you know, a month. You know, I'm going to ask you the same question, right? What makes MUSC different? You can't say it's the best. Like, we'll just say that's already answered.
What makes MUSC different? I'm going to say passion. I think there's a lot of passion around here. For everybody who does everything here is passionate about what they do. Like, I have a real passion for everything I teach. Lisa has a real passion for this whole university and everything that goes around. Everyone around here, including the students, show me passion every day. And that makes, you're surrounded by passionate, high-performing people, you're gonna raise yourself up to meet them where they are. And I think that's what makes us different.
Yeah, I like that. You can be passionate now if you want. There you go. Plus, you're pretty high energy.
Pretty high energy.
So that kind of rubs off. The students you have right now, what class are they in right now?
Third year.
Did they just have a test today? Was that your class?
They did.
Yeah. I was like, thanks for that. I'll follow. I guess if it's better than going the day before the test, because they'd be completely checked out.
They wouldn't be paying attention.
Yeah, right now they're just like, I don't know, there's some guy on stage, he's saying something with sound effects or something. What are we learning right now?
Spinal cord injury.
Oh, how is that? Now, is that a passion? Is that a particular passion of yours? Where's your area of neuro love lay?
Stroke, TBI, and spinal cord. I would have a hard time saying which of those three. Those are my three faves.
It's a unique room when you can say what do you love? And she's like, I love spinal cord injuries. Like, nowhere else does that make any sense. Where that's a good thing to love. Like, I love them. Love strokes. Big fan. Makes total sense in a room full of PTs, though, right?
Total sense, right. Yeah.
You ready for your parting shot?
I think so.
This is The Parting Shot.
The Parting Shot is brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Their mission, to rehabilitate lives by believing in the strength of people. They believe in their clients and their ability to achieve what they once thought impossible. Optimal function to rehabilitate their lives. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
All right, parting shot. What would you leave the students in the room and out of the room with a nice final sentiment?
So keep challenging yourselves, I would say. And this part of the road that you're on is just the very beginning of your road, because your road is going to continue. And the more challenges you put in front of yourself, the further you're going to get. And so don't think that this is the end, because it's never the end. I remember when I graduated, I got my, at the time there was only MHS, there was no DPT, that was a long time ago. And I said, I'm going to get my MHS because I'm never going back to school. And that was stupid, because I went back many times to get many more certifications and et cetera. So keep learning. And here's my biggest piece of advice. Don't shy away from a challenge, because that is how you grow. That's how you become better, is by putting something in front of you that you don't think you can do and then getting it done.
It's our craft, everybody. Yeah.
Love the PT Pinecast?
Yes. Yes.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play. This is the PT Pinecast.
All right, here we go. Our next guest has been a physical therapist for 23 years, having spent 8 years in inpatient rehabilitation, working primarily with those in acute spinal cord injury. After dabbling in clinical research, got his PhD at the University of Florida, and has spent the last 8 years as faculty member at the Medical University of South Carolina here in Charleston. Let's hear it for Mark Bowden. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
I have to bring up first, what was the name of the place we went for lunch? What was that called again?
Zhao Bao Biscuit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So this guy, super nice, picks me up at the airport. And he's like, where do you want to go? He's, you know, we just met. And where do you want to go for lunch? He's like, you know, some really nice here, really nice places there. And I could tell, because I talk to people a lot, I'm like, he's got something up his sleeve. And he's like, I'm like, well, what would you recommend local? And he's like, well, we got this weird place. I think that's how you said it. And what was their tagline again? I love it. I can't remember it.
Dedicated to badass Asian grandmothers everywhere.
Dedicated to badass Asian grandmothers everywhere. And so we just had this like just this weird Asian Southern food, and it was awesome.
It was awesome.
So
how's it sitting on you?
It's great.
Okay,
no,
good.
It's fine.
All right.
Well, I was thinking of that. I actually texted a friend. I was like, I just ate this really weird place. I had, what was that pancake thing we had?
It's just a pancake.
A cabbage pancake. It was awesome. I'm like, I don't know how that's going to play out, but I'm going to be in front of a bunch of people in about an hour, so we're going to find out. But everything is awesome, so we're fine. And I just love that about, you know, Charleston in general, is it's just this kind of mix of a lot of different things, and things are, you know, growing and changing down here in the city at at the university here. Mm-hmm. It's kind of mimicking that. So I wanted to say thanks for that. We ate in a gas station, essentially.
We had great food in a gas station.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Which you don't have a lot. So you've got quite the career, 23 years of PT, but you've done a lot of different things. What are some of the things that you're most passionate about? Besides Asian pancakes in Charleston.
I have done a lot of different things, and I think it's always been, for me, kind of a progression of how can I make a bigger difference in the care of patients and bigger difference in the profession. So I treated for a couple years. I moved up in clinical management and just realized that was not where I wanted to spend my career. The place where I worked did some clinical research and really got attracted by that question of why. And why does therapy work? How does it work? How can you combine it with other things? So went back and got my PhD. My mentor in school was recruited to be the first director for the research department here, and I came with him and said, well, the only way that I would go is to be able to have an appointment in PT also. And so knew that I wanted that to be part of my career in terms of teaching and education, and then recently had the chance to move over into the director position. And to me, that's just kind of an extension of the other things I've been doing, work with more students and have more direct impact.
When you were in your career and you realized that where you were wasn't necessarily where you wanted to spend the rest of your career, did you panic?
I was exactly 32 and a half years old, and I realized I had to work another lifetime before I could retire, and I was not going to do that. Yeah, so it was a bit of a panic, but had mentors from beforehand, and part of that lifelong mentoring team that you never lose track of, reached out to some of them, and some opportunities opened up. Yeah. So it was interesting being a 40-year-old grad student, father of two. But yeah, so that part was a bit of a panic.
Well, the reason I asked, did you panic, is I mentioned in my openers, was in radio, was going to be set, and then all of a sudden came to PT, and in PT school, I actually tried to quit PT school twice. I don't know why my professor talked me out of that one, or why I listened. You can actually just quit. They can't make you stay here. But it's because I was panicking. I didn't know where I fit. I liked most of my rotations. I didn't hate anything, but I didn't love anything, and I was getting nervous. I was like, I don't fit anywhere in here. So to hear you talk about that is all the different, that's one thing that really struck me about your bio was you've done a bunch of different things, but you've never left the field.
And interestingly enough, I think all the things I've done have actually gone full circle because I learned how to do research. I did particular kind of research for a while, but now the most recent work that we've done really kind of merged out of the residency that Sarah was just talking about, really trying to do implementation and dissemination work to really change practice. So how can we take the 17 years that you talked about a while ago and make that faster? And clearly, just doing research, just publishing articles, just presenting it at conferences, isn't doing it. So what else do we need to do to be able to speed that up?
More podcasts is probably my,
Absolutely.
That's just my,
yeah.
More of those. But yeah, you see that a lot in discussion is there's no research to support this. And on the other side, I'm with patients and human beings and I touch people and I'm not doing research and I have to be doing something tomorrow. And it takes too long. It takes that 17 years. So so in terms of with students going from didactic to clinical education, how are you working on that? You want to kind of either enhance or make sure the CI isn't the only person giving that education.
So I think a lot of it starts here. All right. So a lot of it starts with these guys as students so that they feel empowered when they go out to the clinic, that they know what they're doing and they have leadership qualities and they have the ability to go out and speak for themselves.
My first rotation, I had no idea what I was doing. I was like, I will go get you some water, do it. I'll just watch for a little while. But some of that jump right in, some of what Sarah said is like, just do the weird, uncomfortable stuff and it'll come. But that's good advice.
So I think one of the big things is, and I've tried to explain it to students beforehand, like we're very vested in them. I mean, we're all in and we do all of this great stuff in the didactic area and classroom. And then we send them out and somebody else teaches them how to be a clinician. And we really want to be part of that. And so I think the biggest thing is having an on-campus pro bono clinic that's entirely student-run, that they treat patients under the supervision of the faculty. And so the faculty get a chance to demonstrate to them how we think it should be in the clinic. So that's their expectation when they go out on the first rotation.
That's a cool little wade into it, right? And then you get to see how, the students might be one way in class and are completely different when a real human being comes in there and they've they've got to interact with that person?
Absolutely, and they do everything. So when they interact at the patient level, they're also doing recruitment, or they're doing the scheduling, they're doing the follow-up visits, they're doing the chart reviews, everything about it.
Yeah, that's cool. Talk about the pro bono clinic.
So, might pass the phone over to Sarah because she the microphone over to Sarah because she does all of the neuro night. But we have two nights a week. We have Tuesday night is orthopedic, and Wednesday night is neurologic, and it's designed exclusively for people who are uninsured or underinsured, don't have access to therapy. And the students manage everything. There's a student-run board and supervised by the faculty, treat the patients, and they still bill as if they were actually collecting money for it. And so the last year that I saw a total for it, they did $750,000 worth of services.
Wow.
That otherwise would not have been done in this area.
That's a big deal. Give yourselves a round of applause.
So they get a chance to... the other part of it is they collect outcomes there in the same way that Lisa was talking about. And so that becomes a form of scholarship. And Sarah and Gretchen Seif take students to the pro bono clinic, or the pro bono conference, rather. Annually, they get a chance to present their posters and that sort of thing.
Wow. See, I've heard a lot about, you know, pro bono clinics attached to universities, but never those two different things. Number one, data and outcomes. Number two, that monetary impact of what you've provided. You guys would love like a 1% cut of that, right? That'd be awesome. By all means, pro bono, but you know, get a lunch every once in a while, be good. No, but that's a great way to show value. It's like, look what we've done. This is a service, and it has value. And if we charge you for it, it would be, wow, that's a lot of money.
So the other thing that we do in terms of trying to really help this whole clinical progression is developing better relationships with the clinical instructors. So we've started really engaging with the therapist here at MUSC, providing some continuing education credits for them. You know, every clinic really struggles with being able to fund that kind of stuff. And so if you come to an academic medical center, you want to be able to engage with the faculty and with the program. So we're providing those credits for them in exchange for them to be able to engage in the program a little bit differently.
That's a give before an ask, because taking a student as a CI is work,
right?
You know, unless you get a great one, then you can just sit back and do nothing. Just like, you're doing great, keep over there. But that's a great give and a great way to leverage what you have in terms of numbers in the university and say, okay, this relationship between the university and the CI is so important. How do we foster that? Mm-hmm. And doing that is really forward thinking, I think. You brought it up at lunch, and Sarah kind of mentioned it with that relationship with how you guys kicked off your residency and how you got it off the ground. That's another give before an ask. Talk about that a little bit.
When we first tried to figure out how to do the residency, we knew that we need to have a certain number of partners, because I went to Lisa Saladin's office and did a presentation. I thought it was going to be a pretty casual discussion. I thought it was going to be a podcast. No, we were in the conference room. There was a PowerPoint presentation. There was a director of finances there, and went through this whole thing. And she said, this is a lot of work. Why do you want to do this? And what Sarah and I talked about was that we really felt this is the way that we can make the biggest difference, because we really needed to get into the clinics to see what was happening. And you know, there are areas of the country where when you want grass to grow, you just throw out seed. Here in the South, we have to plant sod.
Okay.
And so we needed to get in there and be able to plant some sod and let it grow from within to be able to do that. And so the other thing that Lisa told us is that we shouldn't come and ever ask for money.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
And so as we were going around for, you know, met with every rehab center in the three-state area, they were all trying to figure out how to fund the residency out of their continuing education budget, which is, you know, always dwindling. So we ended up kind of presenting it as a marketing opportunity for them to be able to grow their level of practice, market that they were going to have more clinical specialists and really be the leaders in rehab in the area. Yeah. And so that's really how it grew.
It's a cool lesson to learn. And I always try to find the similarities and differences and everything. Now, I am not going to start a residency anytime soon, ever. But what you did was you showed somebody how something was valuable, HealthSouth,
exactly.
And said, if you write this check, I'm going to give you back more. I saw a great relationship, just to put it in perspective. Anybody doing like sports, ortho, and we work with runners or anything like that after school, an Alter G is super expensive. You need to see a lot of patients and bill a lot to offset an Alter G treadmill. It's like a zero gravity treadmill. It's pretty awesome. It's like you're running on the moon. You should try it. But buying one for your clinic is really expensive. So I saw a clinic pair up with a running shoe store, and they put the Alter G in the window of the running shoe store because they were next to each other, and they said, we'll use it here, and people will want to come in here and use it, and by the way, while they're here and they're running on the moon, they'll probably buy some sneakers. So if we offset this cost together, so it's similar. It's like, how do we help each other instead of you just write me a check and I walk away?
And, you know, we provide data to them at the end of every year, did a couple case series in terms of the people that were treated by the resident, how are they different than those that were treated by a non-resident, and you know, outcomes are better, length of stay or less, and you start attaching dollar signs to things that they're paying for, and then they see a value associated with it. So.
And that only helps the profession. Yeah, that data he's collecting is gonna make sure your salaries go up, so be excited about that, right? That's the idea.
You're welcome.
All right, you ready for your parting shot?
Parting shot.
Parting shot. What's your mic drop moment? What's your parting shot, your nugget of wisdom that you'd want to leave with the students out there?
Not to ever lose the passion that brought you here. All right, so all of you are here because you were dedicated to patient care. You were dedicated to some individual that you've known in your life, maybe family member, maybe it was your own experience, but somehow you got motivated to be able to be part of a caring, giving profession. And don't ever lose that. And I've always said that if I lost that, I would step away from PT. And I've done a lot of different things in my career, but all of them have been in that same pursuit.
Yeah, love it. Let's hear from Mark. Love that.
Keep up with the show online, ptpinecast.com, and on the socials, at ptpinecast.
All right, so we got some of my friends that keep the show on the air, my friends from Arias who missed their cue, radio cue. There they are. Let's thank the ladies who checked you on the way in. You can't say no to a free goniometer, right? Can't say no to a free goniometer. So this is Jolene and this Allie from Arias. Come on over. All right, so we're answering questions. So travel PT, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, and just show of hands, how many students actually know what travel PT is? Oh, told you.
Wow.
They're super smart here. So travel PT, when someone asks you in a nutshell for the students who don't know, what is it briefly?
So travel PT is you can essentially travel anywhere in the country for a temporary assignment.
And vacations.
Vacations. It's like a working vacation is how I like to describe it anyway. But you can go into a clinic or a hospital for 13 weeks and work as a PT. And then after that 13 weeks, head somewhere new.
Yeah. We had a friend who did Colorado, Hawaii, Colorado, Massachusetts, Colorado, Florida. Like, he just kept coming back to Colorado in the winter to ski. And I was like, oh, you figured it out like way early.
And smart man.
Shame on me for that. So you guys have positions in all 50 states, all across the country.
Yes.
Just one setting, more than one, like, you know, where can the students find positions?
All settings. So home health, skilled nursing, inpatient, outpatient, pediatrics. I mean, the whole gamut. Of course, it depends where you're looking, when you're looking, how open and flexible you are, but there's opportunities out there for everything.
Common myths, because travel PT has been brought up a lot lately. What are some of the things that people commonly don't know 100% about?
Okay, so first of all, I know some people think, gosh, what's this going to cost me to have somebody essentially help me find a position or, you know, get me traveling? Absolutely nothing. The benefits of a staffing company such as Arias are completely free to you guys. Even if you want resume critiques, interview tips, anything like that, we do that at Arias and our student outreach team. So utilize us to our full potential. We'd love to help. So there's no fee associated with it. Number two, do you need experience to travel? Absolutely not. So it is very new grad friendly. That tends to be a very common myth. For us at Arias, we always make sure you have mentorship available at the facility you go to. And then we actually just rolled out a new mentorship program where you'll be partnered with a former traveler who was in your shoes after they graduated PT school and wanted to travel. So last but not least, do you have to commit to a travel company for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? With Arias, you do not. Your only commitment to us is each individual travel assignment. So each 13-week period, that is all that we ask of you, because we totally understand that, as you guys have been talking tonight, sometimes careers change. Sometimes you might realize, gosh, I don't know if I want to do this, or my dream job just opened up back home. And so there is no long-term commitment at all.
You're not the Army.
No.
No, good. Okay.
No.
AURUSmedical.com. More information. These guys will be sticking around. And we have some free stuff, right?
Yes. So we're giving away some t-shirts.
Kaipo, can you hold that shirt up? What does it look like? On the front, it says, oh, my quad, Becky. Look at her squat. Appreciate the info. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, guys.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
Our home on the internet.
ptpinecast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
to providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com. PT Pinecast supports Go Baby Go,
a national community-based research, design, and outreach program that provides modified ride-on cars to children birth to age 3 who experience limited mobility. Founded by Cole Galloway from the University of Delaware. For more information about how you can build your own cars or start your own chapter, visit udel.edu/gobabygo.